Is this thing on?
I have 9:37, calling the meeting to order. Our first item of business is the election of president and vice president for the fiscal year. And are there nomination? Is there a nomination for a president?
I nominate Melinda Murray for president.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion carries. Thank you. I will take on this task for the next year. Do we have a motion for nominations for the vice president?
I nominate Andrea Orton for vice president.
Second. Take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposition? Nay. Motion passes. So, and congratulations,
thank you.
Mr.
Thank
Commissioner.
You. I appreciate that.
And thank you, my fellow commissioners.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. I'm happy to do it for another year. Approval of the minutes for June 25th, 2019 meeting. Has everyone had an opportunity to review those minutes?
Are Move there? To accept.
Thank you. Second?
Yes, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No, that motion carries. Any neighborhood council representatives? I see none. So next we will move on to our action, the next action items, which is the proposed stipulation. Mr. Platel.
Richard Platel, Director of Enforcement, Los Angeles City Ethics Commission.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you just speak a little bit louder?
with me this morning is Investigator Stephen Cullen from our office. Good morning, President Murray and members of the board. The stipulation before you for your consideration this morning involves former City Planning Director Michael LeGrand. Mr. LeGrand is represented by Attorney Bradley Hertz of the Sutton Law Firm. Mr. Hertz and Mr. LeGrand are present today. Mr. LeGrand has stipulated to four counts of violating Los Angeles Municipal Code Section 49.5.13C1, receipt of compensation for attempting to influence city action within 12 months of leaving city service, commonly referred to as revolving door violations. Mr. LeGrand left city service in 2016. After receiving a complaint about his post-employment activities, staff conducted an investigation. During the course of the investigation, staff identified a number of projects where Mr. LeGrand had been retained by developers, and then he contacted city officials to influence decisions on their behalf. In a 12-month period following his departure from city service, Mr. LeGrand contacted city officials regarding the four projects in the stipulation and received a total of $125,000 from the project developer for his services. I think I should also state that the City Planning Department has cooperated in staff's investigation. There is nothing in the stipulation that the Planning Department did anything wrong or any development action should have or should not have been undertaken. The penalty in this case comes under Charter Section 706C3, which establishes the formula for administrative actions taken by the Ethics Commission. The maximum penalty is the greater of $5,000 per violation, or three times the amount that was improperly reported, spent, or received. In this matter, there was $125,000 received, so the maximum penalty could be up to $375,000. In mitigation, Mr. LeGrand cooperated with Ethics Commission staff and saved Ethics Commission resources by entering into this stipulation at an early stage prior to the preparation of a probable cause report. Mr. LeGrand has no prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission. In aggravation, the violations are serious and indicate a pattern of activity. Mr. LeGrand was aware of the revolving door restrictions, which indicate the violations were deliberate. Although he ultimately cooperated with staff, Mr. LeGrand initially withheld information from staff reflecting an intent to conceal and deceive. And despite completing ethics training, Mr. LeGrand did not consult ethics staff about how to comply with the law. Based on the facts and circumstances, staff recommends resolving this case by imposing a penalty of $281,250. And the recommended penalty is intended to promote the equitable treatment of respondents, encourage early resolution of violations, and reflect the serious nature of the violations. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions that I'm assuming other members of the commission do as well. I know you can't disclose who the whistleblower is because we have whistleblower laws to protect those people, but approximately how long did your investigation go on?
The whistleblower complaint came in August 2016.
Okay. And so the ethics, the enforcement team has been investigating it since then, is that correct?
That is correct.
Was there any investigation as to whether anyone on the Planning Commission had committed any malfeasance?
The Planning Department cooperated in our investigation. They submitted numerous documents and gave statements. If we had found any violations, we would have investigated those, and if needed, would have started an enforcement action.
Thank you. Now, your proposed amount is $281,250. I did the math, and so that is a 75% penalty. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions?
So it's a 25% reduction. I'm sorry.
Correct.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions?
On the same lines that you had in terms of if you, since you did find that the Planning Department did nothing wrong or any of the people did anything wrong there, do you think there is a need for additional training for what the appropriate response would be if during the 2015 period you see someone that appears to be violating the revolving door? Do we need a little bit more training in that regard, do you think?
Training is always good, and training annually is probably better. Because issues come up, and after a while, you forget about them, and things move on. So training in any department on any of these issues would certainly be helpful.
Does anyone else have any questions?
Along those lines, my concern, and I don't know if it's a concern, is given the number of projects that were involved, there was only one whistleblower? Is that correct?
We had an original whistleblower complaint come in, yes.
And an original whistleblower complaint. So I'm assuming, though, that others within the department were also being approached by Mr. Legrand at the same time, and they were not saying anything or raising their hands?
I can only tell you that the Planning Department personnel cooperated in our investigation to the FOSS. There was no... and supplied all the documents that we requested and gave interviews when we requested those interviews.
After it was brought to their attention by an investigator.
That is correct.
I think your question about training is well taken.
Because we could assume as county, city officials, I'm sorry, that they had to do the same ethics training as everybody else, including all of the commissioners and all of you in the room.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I'll echo the training and education piece in terms of something that's always important to expand. I think that's probably, we're going a little outside the scope of this particular individual. So I'll continue that thread and then just ask maybe a contextual question, as a lot of attention has been made of the size of this penalty in the context of the history of penalties by this commission. Could you maybe shed some light in terms of why you or maybe Heather, who's been with the commission a long time, why we're seeing these kinds of sizable penalties at this time?
This case involving Mr. Legrand, the reason the penalty is so high is that, number one, Mr. Legrand received a lot of money, $125,000. And if you compare it to other one-year ban cases, this is much more severe than any of the others. Because of the amount of money involved, the number of clients involved. So that's why they're bigger. We're talking about larger amounts of money received, more clients. When you are you asking about one-year ban cases or generally the level of the penalty in this matter compared to other cases?
It could be both, yeah.
Well, there was another case with a higher penalty and involved campaign finance violations. But this is a high penalty based on a number of factors. One, the amount of money received, the number of clients. And there was only 25% reduction based on the facts and the aggravation and mitigation.
Thank you.
So without further ado, let's get into the discussion of approving the 25% reduction penalty of $281,250. Based upon reviewing this, I'll give my opinion first. I feel that it's appropriate. These are aggravating circumstances. They do outweigh the mitigation, and because of the severity of the conduct that was over several years, I would recommend the 25% reduction. Is there any other discussion about a higher or lower or same amount?
No, I think that is a good result. This is still an enormously high penalty and one that apparently he has to pay off on a monthly basis based upon all of your investigation of his financial condition. So I think that is appropriate. I think it should serve as a very significant deterrent, and I appreciate the work of the staff and in putting it together and working on those items that you believe that you can truly prove and truly send to an administrative judge. So I would be happy with only a 25% reduction.
I'm in agreement.
Similar. Thank you for you and your team for your work. This is actually very sad, but I appreciate the fact that you guys pursued it. And I think your recommendation and the stipulation is appropriate, and I would move its adoption as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Platel.
Thank you.
Moving on to action item number 6. Morning, Mr. Joseph.
Good morning, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Item number 6 is a review of recusals for a Mr. Kenneth Bazell, who is a member of the Board of Fire and Police Pension Commissioners. Mr. Bazell has served on that board since 2017, and his current term expires in 2020. There have been no previous recusal reviews for Mr. Bazell, and he recused himself during this period 5 times. All 5 of these instances were related to his ownership of stock in the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, and those recusals were recommended by their city attorney because the board is currently involved in litigation that concerns PG&E. So after completing this review, we determined that those recusals were not significant in terms of number or impact, and we recommend a finding that no divestment of that interest be required, and the resolution in Attachment D can be adopted for that purpose.
Is there any discussion or questions?
I have no questions. I move we adopt.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion carries. Now moving on to the recusal of Douglas Collins.
Thank you. So item number 7, the recusals of Mr. Ronald Douglas Collins, who is the chair of the Employee Relations Board. Excuse me. He has served on that board since 2009, and his current term will expire next month. Mr. Collins also has no previous recusal reviews. He also recused himself from five matters during the review period, and all five of his recusals were related to the pension income that he receives from the Los Angeles City Employee Retirement System, or LACERS. So the matters that came before the Employee Relations Board concerned a reciprocal benefit between LACERS and another pension system, and Mr. Collins appropriately recused himself from each one of those matters at the recommendation of the city attorney. And likewise, after completing this review, we determined that those recusals were not significant in terms of number or impact, and we recommend a finding that no divestment be required, and you may also adopt the resolution in attachment D for that purpose here.
Is there any discussion, or are there any questions with regards to R. Douglas Collins?
I have no questions, and I would also move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
No opposition. Motion carries. Now on to the ticket gate, ticket policy.
Item number 8 concerns updates to the city's ticket policy. At the state level, state law requires that if a local jurisdiction wants to adopt a city ticket policy or a local ticket policy, that there are certain provisions that that policy must include. And if the local policy includes each one of the things required by state law, then a city official who receives tickets pursuant to that policy is not receiving a gift. So the city adopted its ticket policy here in 2015. It has only been amended once previously. That was in 2016, and that was also to maintain consistency with another update to state law. Recipients of tickets under this state law are required to file the forms the state's form 802 with the Ethics Commission, and that details the event, the recipient of the ticket, and that sort of thing. And so since the ticket policy has been adopted in this city, there have been about 125 form 802s filed with us, and that represents about 10,000 tickets. And the bulk of those tickets have gone to charity, to city staff, and things of that nature, and only about 1% of those tickets have actually gone to city officials. And so the language that the state has adopted in its new regulation states that local ticket policies must prohibit the disproportionate use of tickets or passes by members of the governing body, the chief administrative officer of the agency, a political appointee, or the department head. Now, in order to get a better understanding of how these tickets are used within the city, staff conducted a lot of outreach to the different city departments, to the city council offices, just to get a feel for the way these things actually work in reality. And what we heard is that a lot of the departments don't receive tickets at all. A lot of them have policies of not accepting tickets that are offered to them. A lot of them receive very few tickets. Many of the offices that receive them in bulk donate them in bulk to charity, to members of the community, to that sort of thing. And so after speaking with them and after speaking with the state's Fair Political Practices Commission to confirm that we would be able to maintain the necessary flexibility by adopting the state's language, what we've chosen to do and what we've put before you in this recommendation on page 3 is to simply adopt the state's language to bring our ticket policy into compliance with state law and to maintain the requisite flexibility for all the different department needs within the city. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
So I don't have a problem with us being consistent with state law, but I guess the language is a little bit confusing. So I'm reading this to mean that they just don't want one person to get all the tickets. They want to have it spread equally distributed.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct. And with this specific language in terms of the categories of people that they have specified at state law, they are specifically concerned with the higher-ranking people within these departments and within city and local governments.
So they just didn't want one group to dominate getting or
That's correct.
Get the tickets. Does anyone have any questions?
I guess I wasn't entirely clear. In terms of our current policy, does it cut back on our current policy by adding this additional disproportionate rule?
No, so the point of us looking backward into the filings that we've had with our office since we adopted the ticket policy was to sort of see where the tickets were going. And as I mentioned, we had nearly 10,000 tickets during this period, but only 1% of those were given to the kind of people that would qualify under this disproportionate standard, the city officials and things like that. So within our jurisdiction, we haven't found this to be much of an issue when we've been looking back at filings. It was not something that we were particularly concerned with in the way that some other jurisdictions were. In fact, this initially came about at the state level because of concerns that they were having with a Bay Area jurisdiction. And by using the disproportionate language, they wanted to give local jurisdictions a little bit of flexibility to decide what works with them. And because of the size of Los Angeles and because of all the different functions of the city departments, we had to consult with them to confirm that maintaining their exact language at the state level would be appropriate and would allow us to keep that kind of flexibility that would enable all the different city departments to enable to keep using tickets in all the appropriate ways that they have been.
So they will continue with the way they have been proceeding, and this is just a warning that it should not be disproportionate. And so far, you also think that that is probably exactly what they were doing in the past.
Yes, we believe, based on the filings that we have with our office, that this has not been much of an issue, and we are going to, in fact, I think, take a little bit more of a proactive role in educating people as far as what the existing ticket policy is and what kind of things we're looking for, just to make sure that nothing ever does start to sort of slide past that line. But no, we believe that the way that these things have been filed with our office has been appropriate thus far, and this is more of a technical amendment to bring us into compliance with state law.
Okay. Was there? Oh, go ahead.
Are all tickets treated equally? So a $5 pancake breakfast ticket versus a $1,000 box ticket at Staples Center for Pink? Is that just one, and it's just randomly distributed among, you know?
Equally in terms of perception?
Oh, well, no. I mean, your calculations. We have 10,000 tickets, and we only keep 1% for ourselves.
Right. So they are I think the best way to think of it in terms of the way that these are actually distributed would be, one common example that we heard would be from a department like, let's say, fire or police, who receive a bulk donation of, let's say, a few hundred tickets. If they turn around and either give those tickets to members of the community or to charity or even to their sworn officers on the street, that none of that would be captured by this amendment. This is specifically targeting the people who are the higher-ups within different organizations. So that, as far as we are concerned, is a completely appropriate use of the tickets. So they are treated equally, and I completely understand your question, but functionally, the way that these have come into our office in the form of these forms 802, that's kind of the most common way that these are distributed.
Okay. I had a question, but I withdraw that. So is there any further discussion or questions?
I just want to say I thought that was a really great report, and you talk about a lot of research and interaction with the state, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Likewise. Is there a motion to approve the application amendment? I'm sorry, the ticket amendment.
So moved.
And I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposition? No, none. Motion carries. Our last action item, professional services agreement.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations to the new and repeating president and vice president. Thank you for being willing to serve again. Item 9 is a new professional services agreement, but it continues existing service that we have had for a number of years with Kennedy Court Reporters for court reporting services when those are needed in the course of an investigation or an enforcement matter. We have the ability to kind of piggyback onto the city attorney's procurement process, and they recently selected Kennedy Court Reporters again as a provider of those services, and so this contract would create an agreement specifically with us, but under the auspices of that procurement process.
All right. Is there a motion to approve the professional services agreement?
Well, I am assuming that the staff has been satisfied with their services thus far.
Yes.
And so I certainly move to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposition. Motion carries.
Thank you.
So that is it for our action items today. And now we just have a little bit of time left since we're not hitting the noon hour. Ms. Holtz, would you like to just, do you have anything you want to point out in the election update or any of the other items?
Well, we'd be happy to, actually, if you're interested in an update on the election information, I would be inclined to call Blanca Perea up to the front. She is our campaign program manager and knows all of this like the back of her hand.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Perea.
Good morning, Commissioners. Blanca Perea, Campaign Program Manager. So earlier this month, we just wrapped up our second special election. The 2019 Special City Council District 12 election concluded on August 13th, and the winner of that election was John Lee. The candidates in the runoff reported contributing $452,918. Contributions and in expenditures reported $631,435, and that was reported up until August 7th. Independent expenditures reached in the general $886,779, and to date, matching funds to the candidates in the runoff received $299,124. The fundraising windows for the 2020 election are open at this time, and to date we have 45 candidates running. And 13 have agreed to participate in our matching funds program to date. They have until candidate filing week in November to decide if they want to participate in the program or opt out. We have received 79 campaign communications. Their most recent reporting period was July 31st, and in total, they have reported $2,608,536,000 in contributions, and in expenditures, $549,500. We have received one independent expenditure. In the amount of $5,000 for one of the council races. This is the earliest we have ever received an independent expenditure report. They usually happen within the 30 days from the election. Other than that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
In the recent special elections, were matching funds requested and applied for?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So in the general, they requested and received $229,124, and in the primary, $1,005,650 in matching funds were requested and given to candidates.
And in the grand scheme, I don't have the figures in front of me. How does that play against, we were concerned about chewing through the matching funds. Was that, do you have any sense of how we're doing relative to?
The trust fund is we still have enough money in the trust fund. Yes.
We're ready for those 45 people who have already filed for the next round.
We have not done the matching funds estimate for the 2020 elections, but I would think we are okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, finally, I would second that.
Did they debate?
Good question. I believe they did.
Well, yes. They didn't have to this time around because it's not until 2020.
Correct. So they still had the option to do the debate or the town hall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, the new ratio, that's not in effect yet, or is it?
No. No, it would be for the 2020 election.
That's correct. Yeah.
But it is interesting to see, one, if they do start debating, or also how much matching funds we're getting, to have some sense, because when 2020 does come in, does this really increase, the people who are running and smaller donors? It'll just be an interesting comparison, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally am very eager to start collecting data about the 2020 election, mm-hmm. so we can see how is the program working, and how have these changed it, the changes to the law changed the process. Yeah.
Right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Mr. Joseph, again, since we have a little bit of time, not going to belabor everything so we can get everybody out of here. Let's do a policy and legislation update to see where we are with all of our measures that we toiled so hard over to see where we are.
Okay, so since we talked about matching funds, the new rules that you just alluded to are going to go into effect on September 24th. Those were approved by City Council on July 30th, and you can find that final ordinance in Attachment A of the policy update. The three conflict of interest codes that we discussed at the previous meeting, which were DOT, Workforce Development Board, and Department of Cannabis Regulation, were all approved in early July. And the behested payment items are under review with the City Attorney's Office.
So they've kicked the can down the road, as it were.
Do we have any word about imminence of response?
We have every expectation of transmitting something in the first half of September.
Okay. So just to, I know you give us, you're great with giving us updates as they occur. As far as lobbying, that is still kicking around, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. We have not heard anything about that recently, other than the, I believe the idea being that it would be taken up after the campaign finance items with behested payments and that sort of thing.
And besides the behested payments, the other proposals, where are they at with regards to the developer ban and the...
Those are with the City Attorney's Office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, as part of the same package with the behested payments.
Okay, but those have moved farther. There's
yes.
more consensus on those, shall we say. Those have moved
until
farther
Until we see what we see, I'm not sure.
You're not?
I am not at all sure. But hopefully. Also, if they do come out in September, are we still at a position that we're not in jeopardy of missing the 2020 election?
The council directed that these ordinances not apply to the 2020 election. So at this point in time, that's how they would be drafted.
All righty.
Are those coming as a package or potentially separate policies? Or too soon to tell?
The current intention is to submit it as a package.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph. And finally, our Madam Executive Director.
Thank you. The bottom line for what I wanted to highlight is that the staff has been doing an amazing job. In the first 7 months of the year, we've processed about 15,000 filings, and we've handled about 13,000 compliance assistance contacts. Our website has been viewed 170,000 times. We are making headway on catching up on the audits. The enforcement team continues to do its investigative work very thoroughly and is forging ahead. And our communications team is doing a great job in creating publications and getting the word out to the folks who need to know about our laws and how they might be affected by them. So they've been doing a great job.
Have you been able to hire the positions that were approved?
We are in the process of hiring. We got funding for one auditor, 9-month funding for one auditor. So we actually have interviews coming up next week, and the earliest we could bring someone on board for that would be October 1st. The education positions that we got were 6-month funding, so we won't be able to hire them until the first of 2020. But we are absolutely very eager to get that moving and bring them on board.
All right. With that, unless anybody else has any further comments, it is 10:12. Move to adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
No public comment.
No.